Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, May 17, 2019. The former SPLM-IO spokesman makes a damning accusation against the first vice president, Taban Deng Gai.
Deng and Agri, Taban is the responsible person for the event. That is it, Peter. You have to know that. You could not go and make an allegation against El Fakir or Akol Kur. Akol was given the instruction by Taban to arrest this guy and kill him.
And one analyst says he believes President Salva Kiir wants to see change in South Sudan.
Violent attempts to usurp power from the people would of course be met with violent resistance, and the cycle of violence cannot end.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The former spokesman of the SPLM-IO, Taban Deng faction, says he has information about who killed Samuel Dong and Agri Idri. Colonel Dixon Galwak says he has credible information from the office of the first vice president, Taban Deng Gai, regarding the disappearance and the killings of Samuel Dong and Agri Idri. Galwak says Gai gave orders for the kidnap of the two South Sudanese critics from Nairobi.
I was with Taban trying him that if Taban can cheat in the truth of Dr. Machar. But when I realized that Taban was there using the people of Upper Nile, especially Nuer, misleading them in order for him to enrich himself, so I quit because I realized that Taban is not a leader. He was just there blackmailing Nuer people, saying that he is the right leader who can also cheat in the truth of Machar. But he faltered. He failed. Instead, he turned against his own people, killing them. Taban was there.
Who did he kill? Who did you kill? I mean, this is a serious allegation you're making. Who did Taban Deng Gai kill?
You're asking me that question. You don't know? Taban is the right person who was actually kidnapping Jim Gadet. Taban was the right person also who is responsible for the loss of Agri and also Dong Samuel Wah. He's the right person who is responsible for the death of these two guys.
How is he responsible? I mean, this is a story you are telling me. Could you give us details since you were his spokesperson?
Those guys were kidnapped before I defect. They were kidnapped in January and I defect around April in 2017. So, but what I know, Taban was the one who was giving instructions to national security through General Akol Kur, telling them that you have to kidnap those guys and bring them to Cuba.
Do you have evidence? Do you have evidence of the instructions he was giving to the head of the national security? Because these are serious allegations, Dixon.
Tanza, even Dong was threatened by Taban. He was told that not to make any allegation against Taban. Dong himself, in Nairobi, on his Facebook. He was actually, you could even read it. And we have also some evidence that Dong and Agri, Taban is the responsible person for the event. That is it, Peter. You have to know that. You could not go and make an allegation against El Fakir or Akol Kur. Akol was given the instruction by Taban to arrest this guy and kill them.
But how would you react to people who would say you are just saying this because you are outside Juba and you just want to tarnish the image of Taban Deng Gai?
Even when I was his spokesperson, when I was in Juba, I talked to Taban and Akol Kur. We were on the same table during the line time in 2018. I was calling, I was telling Taban to release Jimmy Gadega and Akol Kur. I was with them. I told them, you guys, if you are not responsible, I told Taban, if you are not responsible for Jimmy Gadega detention, leave him, so that we will have a room for Nuer to come in. But Taban, in front of me, rejected, said that I will not, he was denying, was actually giving me the full allegation that he was not the one responsible for the arrest of Jimmy Gadis. That was very wrong. And then, because I was under command of someone else, I had to keep quiet. When I realized that Taban was the one detaining Jimmy Gadis, he was the one arresting Dong, he was the one also arresting this Agri.
Yes. Agri, Idri and Samuel Dong disappeared in Nairobi on the 23rd and the 24th of January 2017. Were you in Juba by that time?
I was not in Juba. I joined Juba in April.
And so how did you know that Taban Dengai was the one who gave instructions for the kidnapping in Nairobi?
The government was not having any all those sort of kidnapping before Taban joined Juba. This is what you have to know. We have been at war with Juba government from 2013, like myself, from December 2013 up to 2015, 2016. Government was not having any all those sort of ill intention of kidnapping people. That policy was brought in when Taban went to Juba. This is where you have to know. Once Taban joined Juba, this is where the kidnapping is started. Self-again was having no sort of all those deportation, kidnapping. It was not there. Juba was very clean by then. They got you here. We were meeting them. We were meeting the government official in Addis Ababa, in Dali, in Nairobi, in Kampala. There was no all those sort of all those this one was a tactic when Taban joined Juba and Ezekiel Ruhn. This is what you have to know.
Now, if you are asked to testify in the court of law, would you say what you're telling me now?
I'm ready for that. I don't mind. I have to tell the court that Taban is the right person who is responsible for the death of Dong and Hadi.
That's Colonel Dickson Galwak, former spokesperson of the SPLM-IO Taban Deng faction. South Sudan in Focus asked the office of the first vice president for a reaction on Galwak's claims. Guy's office manager said, quote, "The office of the first vice president does not comment on baseless accusations," end of quote. President Salva Kiir warned citizens against trying to overthrow his administration through undemocratic means. The president said power in South Sudan can only be transferred through elections. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
In his speech about May 16th, the day Southern Sudanese soldiers took up arms against Khartoum in 1983, Kiir did not directly address a social media campaign by the group Red Cut Movement, which urged youth to turn out in large numbers on Thursday to protest against his administration. But the president wanted that any attempts to seize power by violence would be met by force.
The way to stability in South Sudan is through democracy and democratic elections. And this is what we fought for, and we will not compromise it. Violent attempts to usurp power from the people would of course be met with violent resistance. And the cycle of violence cannot end.
No protests were seen in and around the streets of Juba yesterday. In his remarks, Kiir noted the political struggle launched decades ago aimed at ridding South Sudanese of the injustices thrust upon them by various Khartoum regimes. He said the South Sudanese people are still suffering because of power-hungry leaders.
We have a country. We have set up a government. And we are fully in control of our destiny. However, our people are now suffering deadly violence in our own hands as we seek self-fulfillment. We have completely abandoned our vision and we have turned against our people and preying on them. We are selling the country for which millions have died. Majority of our people are now living in poverty.
Kiir said when power is sought outside the institution of democracy, it leads to violence, division, and hatred. He said South Sudan's political leaders must stop wrangling for power and instead invest in peace and democracy.
Enough is enough. Let us set aside the greed for power, stabilize our country, and return to democracy, and give our people a chance to live in a country they deserve. The fighting that has engulfed our country over the last 5 years is extremely petty because it is a struggle for power.
Political analyst Abraham Kwol Nyona, Dean of School of Social and Economic Studies at the University of Juba, says Kiir's message shows he is concerned about what is happening across the country and wants change.
Having known what the SPLM used to be during the time of liberation and having known what the SPLM is here today, these two SPLM, if they were to meet together today, they would have been they could be able to fight each other because they have two different outlook, they have two different kind of vision, they have two different kind of scenarios, they have two different kind of what they expect, what is expected of it as a political party leading the whole country.
Kwol says it is time the SPLM as a party redraws its agenda and ideology and that it should focus on the provision of basic services and implementing the peace agreement.
For SPLM to be a vibrant party, they should be people-centered. And that means they should be able to put their political ego aside and be able to put the interest of the people of South Sudan in front, to be the one leading the front line.
Military spokesman Major General Lul Roy Kwong says May 16th will be commemorated next week because preparations to mark it yesterday have not been finalized. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The South Sudan Revenue Authority says it has collected more than $19 million and about 3 billion South Sudanese pounds over the past 3 months. The Commissioner General of the South Sudan's Revenue Authority is urging aid agencies working in the country to disclose the salaries of their employees or risk having tax waivers delayed for non-compliance. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan Revenue Authority Chief Olympio Atipo told reporters in Juba today that the tax body has collected nearly $20 million in the last 3 months.
Our total collection figures for the first quarter, January to March, in USD, we've collected $19,619,198. Then in terms of pound sterling, we've collected $3,557,619,192.
Before now, the government had never published figures on how much money it collected from taxpayers. The National Revenue Authority was established in December 2018 and is the only body which collects taxes for which it has one single bank account. Previously, every institution collected its own taxes and there was no transparency as to how much money was collected. Atipo says the South Sudan government intends to tap millions of more dollars in personal income taxes from employees of international aid agencies and says the Revenue Authority will get tough with UN agencies and other humanitarian organizations that refuse to list their staff for personal income tax collections. He says humanitarian organizations that fail to disclose the names of their staff and salaries could have their cargo tax exemption denied or delayed.
There is no way in this world that any organization, whether it's a UN or the other, will say that it cannot provide information on the taxable income of employees who are eligible to pay taxes. This theory is only in South Sudan I'm hearing this. Why is it coming a theory here? If you say you are under immunity, you are not supposed to be a tax collector for us. We are not saying you should collect tax for us. Give us information so that we collect our tax. And that one too is under immunity. It is just a basic logic.
Section 92 of South Sudan's Taxation Act 2009, which was later amended in 2016, states that every employer has an obligation to withhold taxes from their employees and pay it to the tax authority before the 15th of the ensuing month. The same law states that employees from organizations with immunity must provide information on their employees and their salaries so that their taxes are paid in full. Atipo says the new regulations dealing with the UN and other humanitarian agencies goes into effect this coming Monday.
If you fail to provide the information, your exemption is going to be delayed.
Atipo says from now on, humanitarian organizations that have not paid their taxes will have their cargo with essential commodities delayed at border entry points. In addition, all UN agencies and humanitarian organizations must present their procurement plans to the Revenue Authority on time before they are given a tax waiver. Some humanitarian organizations have complained of irregularities in the tax collection system. Chandiga Geoffrey Mogas is the country director at International Aid Services.
All the agencies need a lot of sensitization, because at the moment people live in the trauma of detachment in services, especially between the government and humanitarian actors. So I want to allude that it requires a lot of dissemination of information about tax payment, and also letting people know the significance of contributing tax in building up a nation like this. I am aware that there are other organizations which have immunity, but then I think it's the responsibility of the Revenue Authority to dialogue with those organizations.
John Deng Ater works with the national NGO Nile Hope. He says the Revenue Authority must have a clear set of rules to avoid bureaucratic delays.
The blur line between the RRC, the custom, and the Revenue Authority, whether these people are actually working together. Because sometimes things can get delayed in RRC, and then when you go to a custom also it gets delayed and coming to this place. So 2 years ago, my organization was charged like $5,000 for the storage fee because exemption was not delivered on time. And we make sure that we apply 2 months early, before, you know, the humanitarian aid left the destination like U.S. where I came from. So within these three institutions, I don't know how they could reconcile the issue of, you know, making things work on timely manner.
The South Sudan National Revenue Authority was established a year ago with the mission of increasing non-oil revenue after the country lost hundreds of millions of dollars in oil revenue once the conflict erupted in late 2013. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, one South Sudanese diplomat who was fired this week said he quit his job many years ago. Find out why he walked away from his job when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could choose one nice thing to do for your family, what would it be?
Well, the nicest thing I think I can do for my family right now is to give them enough money so that my mom and dad don't have to work again because they're old.
I'll give them comfort, because comfort is the most thing everybody should get. Because when you have comfort, you ease off stress.
That thing I would do for them is education. I will offer them education because that's the best thing you can offer to somebody, because it enables that person to get up and make a choice for his or herself.
I would choose to bring my family together, to be in unity, because I know that when the family is in unity, there is happiness, there is love.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. One of the 40 diplomats fired by the South Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs this week says he quit his job as a diplomat at the South Sudan Foreign Service back in 2015 and joined the SPLM-IO. Nyong Gatur Kwor says he was surprised to see his name among diplomats who were fired for being absent from their duty stations. Kwor says he worked at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs briefly before he was recalled to Juba on what he calls political grounds.
I left Juba and went to New York as one of the counselors at the missions in New York. But a few months later, the Office of Foreign Affairs said that there was no budget from that year and I should not be in New York. But I came to realize that there were political motivations on that decision. So I had to go back to Juba, to my original position at the Office of President, with the Vice President by then.
How did your name end up on the list of diplomats who have been dismissed from the Foreign Service?
This is the question that they need to answer, not me. First, there's two things to this story. One, I left my position, I abandoned my position long ago. That was, you know, let me just say it, from December 15, 2015 to today, I've never been back to my position, because I have joined the oppositions. I have joined Dr. Riek Machar, who is now the head of the main rebellion in South Sudan. But we have signed peace agreement and we are under implementation of this agreement. But to my knowledge, I never been part of that regime, I would say it, for 6 years, about 1,198 days today. I don't understand why they would say that they are dismissing someone that has left, and they know very well that I was part of the opposition.
But I mean, when you left, your name was still in the Foreign Service, and so they consider that you were just an employee who is who has no show or who is nowhere to be seen. So,
well, this is what Mr. Buchwald need to answer himself, because not only that I was posted at the UN as the SPLM-IO representative at the United Nations, I have also debated number of times with the
But
with
I mean, I hear these titles that you people talk about. The SPLM-IO is not a government. How can it be being accredited at the United Nations? It's a guerrilla movement, rather, right?
Yes. You know, you don't have to be accredited. It's just that we are representing the...
So you are representing SPLM-IO from your house in New York?
We were advocating for the peace in South Sudan, and my immediate responsibilities was to advocate at the United Nations. I don't have to, you know, to be employed there, or I don't have to be accredited by the UN.
But did you write a formal letter to Foreign Service that you no longer want to be part of it?
Well, why would I need to write a formal letter when I faced the regime at the negotiation tables in Addis Ababa back in 2014? I was one of those opposition who were there.
But it's so professional. It's professional that when you are terminating your employment with your employer, you need to inform them in writing so that they know that you no longer want to continue working with them. Isn't that the normal procedure?
Well, for an organization that you respect, yes. But to me, the day that I left, the government is a government that I don't honor. I don't think that it was time for me to write a resignation letter. For what? The government that is killing its people, the government that is attacking everybody, the government that is disowning, doing an opposite to what they're supposed to be serving the people of South Sudan. So I do not have any intention to write them and honor them with a letter. No, they just need to know that I am against them.
That's Mignong Gatur Kuor, one of the 40 diplomats fired by the South Sudan Foreign Service earlier this week. He spoke with me from New York yesterday. Members of the pro-government Red Army Foundation want their chairman arrested. The members accused Deng Bol Arwey of allegedly embezzling $250,000 from the foundation. Manyang David Mayar has details for VOA from Juba.
Abraham Kual, a member of Red Army Foundation Board of Trustees who is leading the case against Deng Bol Arwey, says he is holding an arrest warrant for the foundation's chairman.
I sue my chairman, Deng Bol Arwey, an allege of embezzling the $250,000 which was donated to us by Our Excellency the President of the Republic of South Sudan for implementing the program of the Red Army and opening the offices of the Red Army. But unfortunately, the money fall into only a few people pocket, and he could not give us an accountability.
Kual says President Salva Kiir donated the money to the foundation 2 months ago to support former child soldiers. Speaking by phone today, presidential spokesman Atenywek Aten said he has no knowledge of any money being donated to the Red Army Foundation by the president.
There's no $250,000 given anyway. You be careful of fake news in the country. Yeah? There are a lot of them. I'm not aware of any money given to Deng Bol in the office of the president.
Kual says from the 14th to 16th of May, he searched for Bol, hoping to arrest him, only to learn that he fled the country to escape corruption allegations.
Since I brought for him a summon, a default to someone and call me that we should have to go and sit, discuss, and come with amicable solution. But unfortunately, when I came to him and asked him a question, he grew annoyed, he beat the table, and went out. I returned to the court, and I was given someone to arrest him. By late evening, I heard that he has already flown out from the country.
South Sudan in Focus tried to contact Deng Bol by phone, but his old number is no longer working. Kual says, since the formation of the Red Army Foundation in 2013, Deng has been holding the organization's financial history in a briefcase as his personal property. He says Bol has not been transparent in how he manages the foundation's finances. Kual says 250 Red Army Foundation members held a General Assembly meeting earlier today and have elected Gabriel Thiepiol to replace Deng Bol Arroy as leader of the organization. For VOA News, I'm Manyang David Mayar in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Uganda, where Uganda is marking the International AIDS Candlelight Memorial with activities to remember an estimated 2 million Ugandans who died of the disease. The government is doing more to treat and support people infected with HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. But a strong stigma remains in the country. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
While the government and development partners have increased campaigns for HIV awareness, stigma and discrimination keep many Ugandans fearful from learning of or talking about their HIV status. 25-year-old Namanya Martin Paul was born with HIV. Having lost his father to AIDS at the age of 2, he only learned about his status at age 10 when his mother, also HIV positive, was attending antenatal care. His other three siblings were then found to be HIV positive. Namanya was forced to change schools due to discrimination until he made a decision to open up.
It's not easy. There's a particular point in time where a nurse got to know about my situation, where I was keeping my medication, and actually made it like very open to school. So I called for a school parade and told these people, this is who I am. I'm living with HIV. I'm taking my medication and you need to support me.
The International AIDS Candlelight Memorial is one of the world's oldest and largest grassroots mobilization campaigns for HIV awareness. According to the Uganda AIDS Commission, the country records 50,000 new infections annually, about one-third of them being young people. Sarah Naku, the UN AIDS Community Mobilization Advisor, says that many infected people are careful about revealing their status.
We do have laws that discriminate against people living with HIV, that instead of allowing people to come out openly, incidentally people decide to hide because they do not want to fall victims of the law. We also have schools where discrimination does happen. If you don't tap into the teachers, this young person cannot be supported to adhere on treatment.
That report by Halima Athumani brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Banda by Dis Majos. We have been listening to General Paulino with the song Banda. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for joining us. Have a peaceful weekend and tune in next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.